Good afternoon. Welcome, Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. We'll officially start the show after 5 o'clock, but we're going to kick things off a little early today. White Sox falling to the Tigers. Very disheartening. The Tigers coming into town, taking the entire series. Oh, boy. Detroit sucks. That's right. We said it. I said it. I say the we. But here's the deal. We are back in the Allstate Showcase studio. I know you're thinking to yourself, Brian, you lied. You told us last week was your final broadcast in the Allstate Showcase studio. Well, listen, lie is a strong word. I was misinformed. And I kind of hedged my bets last week, but we are back in the Allstate Showcase studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue on a sweltering Father's Day. Hope you are celebrating, honoring either your father or the person in your life who filled that role, because we know there are many different types of people who fill the role if your father is not around. So happy Father's Day. I am here instead of celebrating, and by celebrating, I mean sitting at home doing absolutely nothing. That would have been my Father's Day. I did get a call from my daughter, which was nice, and a text. She doubled up just to make sure that in years to come, I could not say, remember that time you moved to New York and then forgot it was Father's Day? Anyway, big show planned. After 5 o'clock, we are going to talk to Hillary Jacobs-Hendel, who is a psychotherapist and author. We'll talk to her about how you can use your kind of heal your core feelings to maybe better your psychological health. We'll talk to her about that. We'll also talk about dog bars. And then, if you've been following the news, the political cartoonist for the Pittsburgh newspaper was fired. The Chicago Tribune's political cartoonist Scott Stantis will join me at 6:30, and we'll talk about that and the threat to free speech. Yes, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic to say that. If you want to be involved in the show, listen up, because it's a little bit different. I know I'm going to make this mistake, but you are calling a different number today. Don't ask me why. It's a whole big thing. There's a lot of machinations going on here at Tribune Tower and our new location. 312-591-7200. Does that number sound familiar? Sure, it used to be our old number, the number that we all memorized and used to be able to recite in our sleep. And then they said, no, that's not the number anymore. Well, for whatever reason, it is the number this weekend. I don't know why, but that's what they told me. 591-7200, if you want to get a hold of us. That's the text number as well, is what I'm being told. So, you know, that's how you get a hold of us on social media. It is Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. Another big change in today's program. If you call in, you won't be talking to Cody. I have a very poor work ethic golf. He is out watching wrestling. He is at a pay-per-view wrestling match. That's right. So this is very exciting. I don't know how they convinced this gentleman to come in. He is definitely slumming on a Sunday afternoon. The wonderful Jeff Carlin will be answering the phone. You know him if you talk to the Ro Khan Show during the week. He's the executive producer of Ro's program with Anna. And so he is here today. Again, I don't know. I don't know why. They must have gone through everybody else and they were like, listen, Jeff, nobody will work with him. If Cody's off, it's usually we just put a puppet in there and he thinks everything is fine.
I'm only like 20 minutes away. So like, well, I'm the break glass if when new
right,
producer.
The emergency. They pulled the handle. You squirted out mm-hmm. and now you're here. And thankfully your dad was like, it's way too hot to celebrate today.
Are you kidding? Too hot.
So your dad is waiting for a cooler Sunday to celebrate Father's Day, which makes a lot of sense. If you have been living under a rock, one, it's probably very hot there, but you know that there is a excessive heat warning in effect for Cook County until tomorrow evening. If you've been watching any of the Weather Monkeys on television or listening to them here on WGN, you know they're telling you not to do anything. So all the people who are out on Michigan Avenue are doing so at their own risk. It is very, very hot out. But that, you know what? This is what gets me, because people will complain for the rest of the year that it's so cold. And then it finally gets hot. And yeah, it went from nothing. Like last Sunday, we were wearing long sleeves here, and now it's a billion degrees. But that's Chicago. And this is how Chicago gets us. Because I said this yesterday. I was out and I was like, well, it's hot, but it's beautiful. And we forget. People in Chicago forget come February, or they forget now what it's like in February and March. And so now we're like, oh, this is the best city in the world. And it is. And this is why we live here, blah, blah, blah. And it is. But then, you know, then we're beat up the rest of the year by the horrible weather. So just be careful. I'm not going to tell you to hydrate if you don't know how to hydrate at this point. really, you're making room for other people, so that's all right.
Darwinism.
Yeah, it's nature just weeding out the stupid.
Absolutely.
So to have a drink, have water, and then have a drink, and just toast to Father's Day, because it is crazy. So they say older adults, people with heart illness, should be aware of the signs of heat stroke or exhaustion, headache, nausea, muscle cramps, blah, blah, blah. Chicago residents can call 311 to request well-being checks. If you know somebody who needs that, then, you know, by all means, take a look. Still warm in the middle of the night, which was a lot of fun. Okay, now, today is the final show from the Allstate Showcase Studio. We're not going to talk about it much. We talked about it last week. And I also think that at some point you guys are like, all right, we get it. You're leaving. So what? No big deal. It's not going to change how we listen. And it really isn't. All that's going to change is the location. But tomorrow morning, starting at 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran will be in the brand new studios from across the river. I was up there yesterday. The good news, if you follow this program, is that, yes, oh my goodness, the whiteboard has made it across the river. It is laying in the middle of the floor. We don't know exactly where the whiteboard will end up. But
oh, that's yours?
Yes.
Oh.
And notice, we had to bring the old whiteboard. We didn't get the brand spanking new studios over there. Everything is state of the art and beautiful and shiny. And there is our whiteboard with the frame has fallen off it. The corners are all banged up. It doesn't really erase all the way anymore. It's like you had to bring your really ugly dog to your new house. And you're like, all right, I guess we'll keep him in the backyard just because we love him and he's part of the family. But
attached to the chain already. You should bring him, yeah,
we don't really want to put him out where he can be seen by everybody else. So next week we'll have a whiteboard and all of that will be back. Let's stay on the theme, shall we, of nature weeding out the stupid. We'll start Sunday off on a light note. And I will say before I get into this story, everybody turned out okay, but I can't believe it. This is why sometimes it's better off for people to just stay home, because they don't know how to act when they go out in public. This is from South Africa. If you've ever seen these wild animal parks or these safaris, which look terrific, and one day that's a bucket list thing. I want to go and see these animals up close, but I would realize, if I were on a safari, that these wild animals have the moniker wild for a reason, because they're not your aforementioned ugly dog that you have on the chain in your backyard, or a parakeet or anything else. They are wild animals. So somebody who was on vacation stuck his arm out of a Jeep. They were in one of these wild animal parks, and they had stopped the Jeep so they could look at this pride of lions. And the pride of lions had decided to sun themselves in the shade of the Jeep. And that sounds wonderful, doesn't it? You're up close. It's like, ooh, but it's like being at the zoo on the other side of the glass. On the other side of the glass, you're pretty safe. You want to go into the enclosed area. Things aren't going to go well. So, guy decides he's going to roll down the window and pet a lion. Not good. People were in the car with him, were videotaping this, because nothing good or bad happens unless it's on recorded.
Why stop your friend from petting a deadly animal?
Well,
and you can get video of your friend getting.
In their defense, they were screaming for him to get his hand back in and close the window. However,
they still got it on tape.
Well, sure, you got to record it, because at some point, all you're going to see is his feet, and then the lion using his femur as a toothpick. And you're going to go, well, I told Bob to keep his hands inside the window. It's like going on a flume ride at Great America. You don't put your hands outside and go, whee! You know, you keep your hands and arms and head inside the ride at all times. So the male lion, as you can imagine, didn't like being poked by some jerk in a Jeep and decided he was going to go a little crazy. So the lion starts to move and growl, as lions are wont to do when you poke at them. And then, just like in a movie, the window stuck. And the guy was having trouble getting the window back up. Long story short, he did get the window back up. He was fine, but a safari ranger named Naz Smith. And if you have a safari ranger, you want him named Naz Smith. He said, only those who work in the wild know the speed of a lion, and it could have torn the arm off of the person touching it. It would have the power to pull that tourist straight out of that window and kill them instantly in front of their friends. Now, that's the warning you give somebody. You don't just say, hey, do me a favor, keep your arms inside the Jeep. No, you tell them this. It would pull you out and kill you instantly. That seems to carry a little more gravitas than, you know, if you poke at a lion, they might get upset. It also could have easily crashed its way through the open window and torn into those inside. They were lucky to get away with it. They are wild animals, he said in the greatest understatement in the history of speech. And this is the part that always gets me. The ranger said if the lion had killed the person, then game rangers would have probably had to kill it. And if it was the pride male, it could have serious consequences. We see this all the time when people dabble with animals they shouldn't be dabbling with. And then the animal has to die. And listen, I'm not one of these crazed animal rights. I don't believe you should mistreat animals. But I also believe animals sometimes need to be left alone. So if you do something to one of these animals and you get what you deserve, I don't see how it's the animal's fault. But they've developed a taste for human blood. Yeah, that's always good. This kind of story always brought me back.
That was kind of my feeling of the original Jurassic Park, was that, you know, it wreaked havoc, everyone died. Spoiler, sorry. But
wait a minute, but there's a new one.
Yeah, there's a new one coming out. But I don't feel bad for anybody who's getting mauled by a dinosaur. They brought that thing back.
Right. You messed with the whole plan. This is nature's plan. You went in there and dabbled with, just because you had a mosquito in some amethyst doesn't mean that you should take advantage of that. Use it as a nice handle for your walking stick.
Exactly.
Sir Richard Attenborough. We don't need to bring back, I don't need a velociraptor roaming down Michigan Avenue. Even a CGI generated one scared the hell out of me. I don't need to think about that.
Absolutely. I mean, you're against Godzilla. Godzilla, you know, it shouldn't be here. That wasn't our fault.
It's radioactive.
But dinosaurs that we created, I mean, same thing with lions.
If you do it yourself, if you bring it about yourself, you get what you deserve. It's like if a toddler sticks a fork in an outlet, I feel horrible for that toddler because he doesn't know any better. If you, Jeff, were bored during this program, which I probably will happen in the next 20 minutes or so, and decide to stick a fork in an outlet, I can't feel that bad for you. It's just that's just not how it works.
I've been on both sides of that.
You should know better.
Yes, I should.
You should. I'm not saying you do, but you should. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, it'll be news time, and then we will move on with the program. We'll talk to Hillary Jacobs-Hendel on the other side of the news. She has a new book, It's Not Always Depression. We'll talk about feelings and emotions and how sometimes we can make a little progress just by being aware of our emotions ourselves. So we'll talk to her about that. Then at 5:30, being a tourist in your own town, 6 o'clock, we will talk, if you have a dog and you like to drink, then, oh man, we got to find out where you can take your doggy, where you can have a couple of pops and the dog can just chill out and maybe be your designated walker home. I think that's how we need to train our dogs, and we'll talk about
free speech after 6:30.
So a lot to get to, but first we have to get to the news. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN from the Allstate Showcase Studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue. Mental health has been in the news a lot in the last few weeks, as it should be all the time, and yet we don't want to think about it, or we just don't know how to talk about it. A lot of things going on in the news. My guest Hillary Jacobs-Hendel has a new book out. It's called It's Not Always Depression, and we welcome her to the program now. Hillary, thanks for coming on. Glad you could be here today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here today, Brian. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's my pleasure. Let's start. Let's get the title of the book out of the way, because I don't want people, as we go into this, I don't want people to misunderstand. It's not always depression doesn't mean that depression is not a real thing and that people are suffering from it. But sometimes people who even have been diagnosed as being depressed or suffering from depression are not responding to treatment. So there may be something else underlying their issue. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And the way I think of it, just briefly, is that all the things that affect us and all the different diagnoses we have are some combination of genetics and experience and disposition, including chemistry and whatnot. But what we're getting at with the title of the book is that when you're diagnosed with depression or anxiety or any diagnosis that a psychiatrist might give you, it's not the end of the story. It's like the tip of an iceberg. And no matter what is the cause of it, you can still work to feel better by understanding those things and our experiences that affect us, and even how having a diagnosis and having a mental illness affects our self-esteem, and still work to feel better, and even to change the biochemistry, I believe, through working with emotions, which I talk about in the book, and various other techniques and ways of thinking about what's happening to us.
Well, in this culture, and especially for men, but I think for everybody, emotions are something that we're forced to kind of put aside. They're not, you don't really talk about your emotions, maybe with your close family members or a close friend, but you don't bring them out into the public view. I had this conversation with my daughter, who's 22 and just moved to New York last week. She was, as I was getting ready to leave, she was like, I don't want you to cry. I don't like emotions. I don't want you showing emotions. I don't want to show emotions. That's not healthy for anybody, is it?
Right, and that's such a great example. It's not, but it's not anybody's fault, because I really have started to write about how we seem to be in an emotion-phobic culture for no particular good reason that I can think of, except that, just the history of how things have evolved. And there are so many things we can do to demystify emotions and learn about them, because what we do know is that avoiding emotions is probably a large part of what this epidemic of mental health issues is all about. If we avoid emotions, they wreak havoc. We sort of come out of balance. And it's not about being all about emotions or wearing your heart on your sleeve, but we're out of balance, too disconnected from our heart and what's happening really in our body, which is where emotions live, which most people don't know. I certainly didn't know it until I started to study emotions and the neurobiology and how emotions really work.
When did emotion science start to come to the forefront? When did people start paying attention?
It's a really good question. There are papers that are dating back. Charles Darwin and William James wrote about emotions being physical impulses in the body in the turn of the century. And for whatever reason, like so much in science, for politics and whatever else is going on that affects why people take one track of research and study and not another, I don't quite know. But a lot, there's a lot that's been done about the brain, even like deciding to go with medicine in terms of biochemistry and treating medicine with drugs as opposed to a whole emerging field of using brainwaves and neurofeedback, and which was also done back in the 40s. And then for whatever, following the money or the politics, we stopped that line of inquiry and research.
And we just decided that emotions were something that didn't need to be studied. Did we start to feel they weren't that important?
I think it has to do with people being, in a capitalist society where you have to be productive. I mean, I think it goes way back to, one, there used to be no time for emotions because all we did was protect ourselves from being killed, we go way back in time and have to forage for food.
Right.
But now we live in modern society where there's time to think and self-actualize, and when we slow down, as many people don't slow down because, one, they're too busy being productive, but when they do slow down, they start to feel things and they don't know what to do with them, so we keep moving. And because also the society and technology, as everything moves faster, it speeds us up and creates more anxiety. And then also, if you look back to even Descartes, who said, I think, therefore I am, mm-hmm. and the whole mentality of sort of the Puritan ethic of pick yourself up by your bootstraps, it's all about just getting over it and overcoming whatever you're feeling and pushing on. And,
well, sure, we're told, like you said, you pull yourself up, you suck it up, there's no crying in baseball, it goes on right. And on that we hear this, but and so we start to feel if we show emotion, if we sometimes become overcome with emotions, we start to feel weak, we start to feel less, and that starts a spiral that, can lead to all sorts of unfortunate things.
You mean if we start to feel our emotions, we can spiral down and get very frightened of them?
Both ways, right? If I feel weak because I shouldn't have these emotions, I should be able to just soldier through.
Yes.
That sends me into some sort of shame. But also, if I start letting myself feel emotions and I'm not used to it, that can send me another way.
Yes, That's exactly right. But and that's why I'm so passionate about educating people about emotions, because so much of when you teach people certain basic things, I learned these things rather recently at the age of 39 when I stumbled on a scientific conference on emotions and my mind was blown. But if you demystify emotions and share a couple of basic things, like, for example, that emotions are not under conscious control. So I teach people your emotions just are. They get triggered in the middle of the brain. They send impulses down and physiological reactions into the body. And it's only after you have them that you can sort of put a label on it and know, you know, I'm feeling scared or I'm feeling sad. But once you know that, then you can stop judging yourself for being weak. You know, emotions are not for the weak. They are for the human. And it's just a myth that we are weak when we feel. Now, what you do after you have a feeling is another story. That we have some ability to control, and we want our behavior to be constructive and not destructive.
And that's we get into, as you call it, the change triangle, which we'll get into in a second. Before we go on, since we're gonna look at the change triangle and how to deal with our emotions, there are a couple different kinds of emotions that you write about. There's core emotions and then inhibitory emotions. What's the difference?
First, Brian, you've done your homework. That's wonderful. That's terrific. So the difference is that we need to know the difference of all the different types of emotions we have, because it affects how we work with them. But core emotions are these things that just happen to us that are supposed to happen. They tell us about the environment. So, and they're survival emotions. This is what Darwin and William James wrote about. So, you know, if we're walking along and somebody attacks us, if we didn't feel anything, we would probably end up dead. There would be no reaction to it. Or if by the time we could think about it, it would be too late. So core emotions are meant to help us survive and to tell us if our environment is safe or dangerous, and if something feels good or something feels bad. They're very basic physiological programs.
Okay.
And they're really important. It's the core emotions that we want to tend to, at least to recognize when we're having them. Inhibitory emotions, which are, well, I guess I should just say, the core emotions that I work with in the change triangle, just so people listening know, and there's no mystery, are anger, fear, sadness, disgust, joy, excitement, and sexual excitement.
Okay.
And these just happen, we pick up the environment through our five senses, and emotions are evoked. Now, if we are taught through our cultures and our families that these emotions are not okay, like the example you gave where your daughter doesn't want to see you cry.
Right.
The inhibitory emotions are there to inhibit the core emotional expression. And the inhibitory emotions are anxiety, guilt, and shame.
So she shamed me. That's
what
we take away from that story. She shamed me.
She did, because she was telling you, your tears, your sadness makes me anxious. I can't take it.
Right.
And therefore, I need to stop it in you. And that is such a great example of what happens between parents and children with no harm intended. But it's Father's Day, and fathers and sons is a big thing on because how we are raised and how emotions are treated are how we will come to feel about our own emotions. So it's important for parents to learn about emotions and to not shame their children for having emotions inadvertently, just because they don't.
Because maybe that's how they were brought up. They don't know how to deal with their own emotions, so how can they teach children to handle them in a healthy manner if they don't know how to do it themselves?
That's exactly right. And this is nobody's fault, but it is our responsibility to try to change the society that we live in so that generations, so we can reverse this terrible epidemic we're seeing in anxiety, depression, all sorts of other diagnoses like eating disorders, and, of course, addiction, which is a huge problem right now.
So what is the change triangle?
So the change triangle is just it's a simple map and a tool that I adapted from the academic literature. This is something that you would see in textbooks for these things called the short-term dynamic psychotherapies. David Malin in the 1970s first wrote a book that had the triangle. And when I was at this conference, when I first learned about emotions, because before that, in social work school, and in, I was a scientist in at heart, and all my schooling had to do with science and social psychology. I never had a class on emotions, so this was my first exposure. They put this big triangle up on the slide, on the screen, and I felt completely, I understood myself in a whole new way that was very helpful, and what it was doing was showing me the relationship between my core emotions, which were at the bottom of the triangle. For people listening out there, you can almost imagine an upside-down triangle superimposed on your body, and the point of the triangle is somewhere between your heart, and it's in your core. It's
okay.
Below your heart and around your GI tract. And then it kind of goes up so that the top of the triangle is like, just imagine it kind of at the level of your head, above your shoulders. So it's diagramming these core emotions, which are very important to know that they're physical. We can, when you're having something, like when you were going to cry, Brian, when you were with your daughter, if I had asked you to slow down, if we were together in a room and you felt safe with me, and I said, let's just really slow way down and turn your attention below the neck inside your body and start to name what are the feelings in your body, the sensations that are telling you that you have sadness right now. And you might feel a heaviness in your chest, mm-hmm. or you might feel something, you know, you'll feel your eyes, something welling up in your eyes. But these are, there's a whole host of physical sensations for each core emotion that we can come to recognize. So core emotions are in the body, and the change triangle shows you the relationship between those core emotions and the inhibitory, anxiety, guilt, and shame, right. those emotions. And on the last corner, on the top of the triangle, are all the ways that I call them defenses. I mean, this is not a new word, but it's not defenses in the kind of pejorative sense. It's by definition anything we do to avoid feeling uncomfortable. And it ranges from just rolling your eyes when you don't like what your partner says, or changing the subject during a conversation because it's evoking something uncomfortable in you, all the way towards reaching for a drink when you're uncomfortable, to cutting yourself or doing any kind of self-harm, to addictions, to what are called the personality disorders. There's all sorts of ways that we avoid discomfort and intense physical pain, depending on how much trauma and adversity we experienced.
So mastering this, which I'm sure for some people can be done fairly quickly, for others it would take a long time, but once you master this, it doesn't necessarily erase other problems, but it helps you deal, am I on the right track, helps
You're
you deal
right
with
track.
Those and then, you know, overcome maybe some symptoms of what may be some other sort of issue.
Yeah, well, it's really the path to recovery and healing from what ails, and it's a practice. So you're right. You don't just work the triangle once. It's a practice over a lifetime, because we at any given moment we are somewhere on the three corners of the triangle. We're either in core emotion, inhibitory emotion, or defense, or there's one more place we are, which is at the bottom of the triangle, below the triangle, which is it's what I call the open-hearted state of the authentic self. But what it is, it's a biologically regulated, calm state.
I don't think I've ever reached that point. I have to get under the triangle.
Yeah.
Hillary, if people want to know more about it, the book is called It's Not Always Depression. You can go to HillaryJacobsHendel.com, get all the information on the book, learn all about Hillary. This we could talk about this for hours. I really appreciate you being here today, and because this is an issue, and I'm sure you'd agree, that needs to be talked about all the time. We only seem to focus on it when we're confronted with high-profile tragedies, or if we have a tragedy in our own life. This is something that the country needs to be focused on all the time.
I totally agree with you, Brian. Absolutely. And I just want to let people know I have tons of free resources on my website. They can just Google the Change Triangle, and they can also just Google my name, and they can see what it looks like and read. I have a blog there they can sign up for, and videos, lots of stuff. This is a labor of love to educate the public on emotions, because it just blew my mind. It changed my life, and it's changed thousands of other people who learn about it. It's just, there's no downside.
No, it doesn't. Does not seem that way. Keep up the great work, Hillary. I appreciate you being with us today. Thanks very much. Again, Hillary@JacobsHendel.com, the Change Triangle. If you just Google that, you'll get to all the information that you need. Hillary, thanks again. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks. You too, Brian.
Take care.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. All right. Wow, that's a lot. I'm living in the inhibitory, unfortunately. I got to get out of that corner of the triangle and move on. Again, HillaryJacobsHendel.com, the Change Triangle. You can check it out and learn all about it. Let's do this, then there's more.
Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty.
Yeah, man.
It is.
My neck is gritty. I'm dirty all the time, so it doesn't really matter. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN. Pam, I have to get the sound of whatever that wheezing, that Walking Dead sort of horrific sound that you opened, actuality you used at the beginning of your news.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's scary.
I need it. I'm going to put it in my vault and use it for God only knows what horrible purposes down the road.
Well, there's a copyright on it. How much are you willing to pay?
Listen, we could talk
about
that.
Someone very near and dear to me, that was actual asthma sound.
Oh, was it really?
Mm-hmm. Actually, it was me.
So you're exploiting
myself.
Your own health. Was that real asthma
sound?
Yeah, it was
real.
It was real. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I wouldn't
think that's even scarier.
Yeah, I'm an advocate for lung health. Yes. And so I really want to make sure that people understand how dangerous those types of issues can be. People sometimes take it for granted. You know, somebody says they have asthma.
You put yourself in harm's way for that piece of tape, did you?
I tell you, walking around in the city right now is putting myself in harm's way. Well, the air is just that heavy.
Yeah, it's oppressive. It's like you walk outside and somebody throws a wool blanket on you.
Right.
A wet wool blanket.
Right. Since it's your show and it's kind of funny, I was in Las Vegas recently and hadn't spent a summer there ever.
Okay.
And you go outside, you come out of the airport. First of all, the airport, the air conditioning is poor. Then you go outside and you're thinking, oh, it's going to be like a nice breeze or something at night. Yeah,
there's
it's a
no
breeze, but it's a hot breeze.
Yeah, it's like being in a convection oven.
It's like being behind an elephant with really bad gas.
Wow.
That's what I think.
There's an analogy
I had
not heard.
You just don't want to be there. It's like,
No, you definitely do not. Well, you're all right now, though, right?
I'm fine. Yeah, okay. You have to have your medications and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I still want the tape. I'm glad you're okay, but I still want that tape because we were terrified listening to it. So it made an impact.
See?
Did exactly what you wanted it to do.
I made you sit up and listen.
You did.
Not just another boring newscast.
No, listen, your newscasts are never boring. It was just, I thought, and I'm like five blocks away. I can't help you.
That's true.
I can't give you a Heimlich. I can't do anything.
Right. No,
I probably can't even call for help because I don't know what the phone numbers are.
Right.
I don't know what the addresses are. I don't know what the text number is. I don't know what's going on here. I know I'm in the Allstate Showcase studio.
Right.
I know Jeff Carlin is here helping us out today for Cody. But Jeff told me if people are texting, they need to text the regular number, 981-7200. But if you're calling, you need to call the old number, 591-7200.
And is that going to change?
Of course it will. Okay. But no one will tell us when.
Oh boy.
It's just going to change. We're just going to figure it out. No, tomorrow, once Steve Cochran starts, all the numbers will be 981-7200.
Okay.
So once tomorrow morning starts, the numbers go back to regular. But today, so for my show and Karen's show and Rick and Radio Theater and then Nick, you've got to call 591-7200 or you can text 981-7200. And if that's too confusing, put an ice bag on your head, sit back and listen, and tomorrow morning everything's going to be fine.
There you go.
No need to. It's 100 degrees. You don't need to panic and worry yourself and jot notes down and try to figure out what number am I calling, who am I texting, do I need to send up a smoke signal. Just walk down and hold a sign up to the window. That's probably going to be the easiest way to communicate with us from now until tomorrow morning when Steve takes over from the new space. How are you liking the new space?
It is beautiful, but you will need smoke signals up here. I mean, we're way up.
We're very far up.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
It
very,
is beautiful.
Very high
all
up
way
in
around.
The air.
I mean, the view of the river, you can see Navy Pier, you can see the Ferris wheel. Oh my gosh! It's
you can see people in the next building doing untoward things,
doing stuff.
Here's a tip for those of you who may live in a high rise or are moving to a high rise for the first time: close your curtains
because radio stations are everywhere.
Yes, radio stations and prying eyes. It's like hello.
We will start describing what we're seeing.
I saw some people who really need to clean up a little bit in their apartments next door. Yes, when I was up there yesterday,
I saw somebody with disheveled. A tent inside the house.
All right, what's going on? What's going on in this city? That's why you don't look in other people's houses.
It's a safe space.
Is it really? What, is it Brian Wilson living across the street from us now? He's got a sandbox and a tent, and he's, you know, writing weird songs, and then, you know, then he's making that wheezing sound that that Pam was making. It's all too crazy. Yesterday was a wonderful day in the city. It was hot, but it was a beautiful day, and my wife and I got to do something that we hadn't really done before, and I'm wondering if you take advantage of this, because we live in a world-class city. And a lot of times when you live in a city like this, you go about your daily life. We're all very busy. We're working. We're doing what we need to do. And we don't really take time to appreciate what's going on around us. And I think a lot of us who worked in this building for a long time have been experiencing that lately, going, oh my gosh, we didn't fully appreciate all the history and all the beauty of this building. Well, the same can be said outside of this building in this entire city. I had always wanted to go on one of those architecture tours along the river, and there's a number of companies that give them. And I'm a guy who's been around a few years. You would think, having lived here pretty much my whole life, I would have done that at some point. But I had never done it. My daughter had done it, you know, of course, with school. There was a big trip, and my wife had gone as a chaperone on there, and friends of mine had all done it. And it's one of those things when somebody comes to the city, they would ask me, hey, what should I do? I'm here for a few days. I would say, oh, you got to go on one of these architecture tours, never having been on one myself, which is kind of fake tour guiding. I'm disseminating false information. Thankfully, I was right, because it's a no-lose proposition to go on one of these things. So for Valentine's Day, my wife had gone on, whether it was Groupon or one of these sites, and we've decided we give too much stuff. You know, we've got enough stuff. We've accumulated stuff over the years. So now we try to give experiences instead of things. So that for a gift, you know, here, we're going to go do this together. So she gave me for Valentine's Day one of these tours. She went with, you know, she's not stupid. She bought two tickets. I got to tell you, it was amazing. First of all, kudos to the docent, who was just wonderful on this tour. Very, very informative. But pointed out the Tribune Tower on the way up the main branch and said, I'm going to wait and talk about the Trib Tower on the way back. So she gave a beautiful description of Tribune Tower. And having lived here all my life, I knew a lot of the buildings, but there was a lot of the architectural information I was not aware of. There were certain things I didn't know, and I found myself on this boat surrounded by tourists. And I know if you're driving or if you're trying to walk quickly down Michigan Avenue or State Street or the lakefront, sometimes we bemoan tourists because they're gawking at things. Slack-jawed yokels coming to our town and clogging things up, which I know people would have accused me of that last week when I was in Manhattan, because I stopped every once in a while and looked up. And listen, I'm surrounded by tall buildings. I know what a building looks like, but I'd never been to Manhattan in the daytime, sober. So I figured, you know, this is a good time to take a look. But seeing the city from a different vantage point was wonderful, having lived here my whole life. But seeing it kind of through other people's eyes was something that made me appreciate even more than I already do what this city has to offer and the history behind it. And you know, why it's called the Second City, which that one I didn't know. The Windy City thing I knew. You know that. People think it's because it's windy, but
right,
that's not why.
It's from the papers.
It's because politicians. Because we're bragging so much. Yep. We were bragging about getting the World's Fair and all this, and then somebody at the New York Times said something about us being so full of wind. Wind bags.
That's us.
Yes, so we'll brag about it. Do you know why it's called the Second City? Now, I don't know if this could be docent myths that they're spreading to slack-jawed yokels who are on a boat in the middle of the day. And I'm, you know, kind of savvy when it comes to that, but this made sense. The reason that she gave that we are called the Second City, not because we're second behind New York, but because the city burned to the ground, basically, and this is the Second City. Which made sense. I was like, okay, even if it's false, it's one of those reasons that you go, all right, I can see that. We had a city. it burned to the ground.
Yeah, why not?
Then we rebuilt it, and now we're in the second city. So I went, okay, I'll buy into that one, and then I'll disseminate it widely.
Speaking of false things that may or may not be true.
Uh-oh, yes.
So we've been going back and forth between the new tower and the old tower here, and it's been quite a thing because I've got to carry big boxes full of stuff and equipment. And
right, you guys have a lot of gear for Rodana's show.
Yeah, and there was a rumor that we were going to try to do an early show from the new station, but it didn't happen. So, but I was coming back, and there was someone giving a tour of the Tribune Tower right outside here. And he was like, oh, beautiful tile on the building up there reflects over and then this. And I'm like, what?
Huh?
I wasn't paying attention closely, but apparently he was talking about the Wrigley building. And then I'm like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. But then he turned his attention to the Apple Store.
Oh, sure, the Apple Store.
Beautiful Apple Store.
Which has been here since '07.
Yeah, and Tim Cook came and yada, yada, yada. And there's a giant Apple logo on the top of it, which there is not.
There is not.
Absolutely.
That is false.
Bogus docent logic, or lying, rather.
It was, our docent, when she pointed out the Apple Store, said that from the air, it looks like the top of a MacBook, which I will give it that it does
it
when
does.
when you're high above and you look down, but there is no Apple logo on it.
No, and it looks like a laptop that's been driven over by a cab.
Yeah, for, if you want to put your best foot forward as a laptop manufacturer, this one is all beat up and discolored on the corners, and, you know, it's like some of these other, they talked about Prudential Plaza, where the Tribune newspaper has moved to, and if you're old enough to remember, and you may be, you probably are, when at first it was white marble. But the white marble didn't hold up to Chicago's brutal elements, so they had to strip that all down like 2 years later and put up all those. But this is, you know, I learned about the schoolhouse style of architecture in Chicago, which is, when the structure is supported by the steel skeleton and the red brick outside is just for decoration. So if you go along the river or walk along, you'll see a lot of these red brick buildings and you think, oh, that brick, that's a sturdy building because all that brick. Not really. It's sturdy because of the infrastructure. Not because of the brick. The brick is just secondary. So if you get a chance to see this city through somebody else's eyes, I recommend you do it, especially during the summer. This is the time to get out and do stuff. I hadn't really walked along the Riverwalk too much because, you know, I don't like to leave the house. I come here. That's pretty much it. I will eagerly go to New Orleans. But begrudgingly, I went to New York last week, and I have to go back in a couple weeks. But that turned out not to be as dismal a place as I thought. Thanks to the fake news of movies and television, I envisioned nothing but a horror show in New York.
Genetically modified turtles running around.
Unbelievable. Superheroes and supervillains just dropping out of the sky. All sorts of things. But that was not the case. There were actually human beings who, for the most part, were polite.
Oh, really?
It was weird. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. I expected to be told to drop dead the minute I got off the plane. Then I realized, all right, I'm in Newark, so I could end up in a swamp. Then we got into New York. And I was like, well, the minute I go, you know, I walk in somewhere, somebody's going to tell me to go pound sand. And that didn't happen. I even asked people, I asked city employees for, like, directions and stuff. And they were pleasant and gave me directions that ended up being accurate. They didn't send me out, like, I didn't end up in Queens when I was trying to get to the World Trade Center. I was trying to get to the Village, and they didn't send me out to, you know, Flatbush Avenue. They told me where to go, and I was there. But I have to go back and try to figure out again. I will at some point know the subway system well enough to not have to unfold my map.
Oh, man.
Like a dork. But I don't care. I'm an old man. If I have to look at a map, my daughter's like, well, just use it on your phone. No, that doesn't work for me. I need to see the big picture. Unless I'm carrying like a tablet around my neck like Flava Flav.
The size of the Apple Store.
Yes, I need it. Oh, that would be good. Mine would be in better shape. I'd take better care of it than that. Wouldn't be all banged up. But I can't look at the little phone. I need the big picture so I can kind of, here's my destination, here's where I am. All right, here's how I get there. And it worked. And I figured out a good folding method, so I was only opening the map a little bit. So only the portions that I needed. But that was that. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got so much to talk about. Well, we do. So I'll do it after this. All right, a quick correction. because I don't want to be I don't want it to be said that I do not correct my mistakes. It's Chicago school style of architecture, not schoolhouse. And I said Aon Center. I meant the Standard Oil Building, which is now Prudential Plaza. I think I said Prudential. Maybe I said Aon. Either way, but it was the Standard Oil Building, which then became Prudential Building, that was covered in marble and then had to be resurfaced. So there you go. Thank you to our listener in 630, in the 630 for pointing that out. I am not arrogant enough to believe that I will not occasionally make a mistake. In fact, maybe I intentionally make the mistakes to see if you're listening. What do you think about that? Maybe that's my evil plan. That's what I do. That's how I test Cody. I don't have to test Jeff. I know Jeff is listening. No, he's not.
Wait, what?
I know. See, I don't believe it. There's people outside walking along. I love working from the studio during the summer because it is always, oh, man, this is nice. Because it's light during the entire show. It's when you get into the, and you guys deal with this during the afternoon, in the winter when it would get dark at like 2:15.
Right.
And they're like, oh, my God, what are we broadcasting in the middle of the night?
We had to bring our lamps in at one point because
I liked
too dark.
You guys had all sorts of mood lighting. How's the lighting in the new place?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
It's like studio lighting, so there's a color wheel on the wall, so you can pick.
Really?
You can pick the hue.
Get out.
I swear, you can set it to like twinkle. You can set it, make it look like a studio where it's like flashing like lights here and there.
So I could have a rave?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you're telling
me?
I could go all Venus flytrap and get a nice purple hue or Steve Martin.
I want a
blue spot. A fog machine?
Brighter, lower.
This is going to be fantastic. Cody's going to hate it because I'm going to make him change the lighting. Every time we change a guest or a topic, we're going to change the lighting.
Yeah, I think there's a random mode too, so you can just be like, let's see what happens.
Boy, that's not going to distract me at all. Just to have it on and have things happening, sparkling and lasers and and I love a good laser show. You know what I don't like? Taking public transportation. And this is a reason why. And I was talking about New York before. There was a video that went viral. And this is the kind of thing you can see. And I'm sure you've seen horrible things as you take the L and the subway and the bus around here. A woman was filmed brazenly shaving her legs in front of hundreds of commuters at a busy subway station in New York. She was at the Times Square station. So she's sitting on the bench, and she's looking at her legs, which we all do. Who doesn't gaze at their gams while they're on the train platform? What else are you going to do? You can't make eye contact with people. They take it as a sign of aggression. So you look at your legs. Well, she decided her legs were a little stubbly. I don't know if she had just come from the Duane Reade and had all these things in her bag, but she took out shaving cream, lathered up on the platform, and then proceeded to shave her legs while sitting on the bench. This is, you thought I was joking when I said I didn't like leaving the house. This is why. At least 10 people are sitting right near her, and they're looking at her, and nobody says anything because it's New York. I'm wondering if you were on this, if you were on the subway and somebody was shaving, would you say something? I would not. I would not say a word because I'm thinking if you're that much of a loon that you're shaving your legs right here on the platform, I'm going to come up to you and you're going to try to shave my head off my body. Right? This is not going to go well. You look like you were going to say something. You were was that the look of dismay?
No, I've seen worse, though. If you cut, like, trimming their nails on it.
Oh, yeah, I see that on the airplane once in a while.
Yeah, people like, tweezering parts of their body didn't know needed tweezering.
Listen, unless you're homeless, that stuff should be done at home. And really, I don't think homeless people are that worried about if their legs are hairy.
No.
They've got other things to worry about.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that sort of personal hygiene in public, you got to remember, folks, it's called public transportation for a reason.
The L's there for a reason. Jeez.
Right. I don't do that kind of stuff in my private car. You know, I'm not in the car, and nobody's with me except the voices, and they don't, you know, they judge, but not about my grooming. They have all sorts of other things to judge about. All right, we got to take a break. If you've learned anything from this program, stop grooming in public. On the other side of the news, though, you're going to learn something else. If you have a pooch in the city and you're thinking, man, I want to go out for a beer. It's such a beautiful afternoon, but I got to take Spike for a walk and I don't know what to do with him. Hey, guess what? Your dog is welcome in a lot of places. We will talk to Marissa Conrad from the Tribune and talk all about dog bar culture. That on the other side of the news. Which comes
look at
this.
That,
Jeff Carlin. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Roger, that went off without a hitch. Good for you. As we bring you in, I know you had said there was, Roger thought there was some computer issues. There is not. 312-981-9811. 7200 is the fax number. If you want to call us, it's 312-591-7200. That's the old landline number. Don't worry about it. Just wait and call Steve tomorrow when everything's the same. Don't worry about it. Tonight, you know what you should do? You should go outside, enjoy the rest of your Father's Day, take your dog for a walk, and pull up a stool somewhere and get a nice cold beverage, adult or otherwise, with your dog. And if you're thinking, we can't do that, but dogs are not allowed in bars. What are you, stupid? No, I'm not, because dog bar culture is alive and well and booming in Chicago. Marissa Conrad wrote all about it in the Tribune the other day, and Marissa joins me in studio. Thanks for being here. I'm glad you took some time out today.
Thank you for having me.
So is this a relatively new thing, or have dog bars, quote unquote, been around for a while?
They've been around for a while. The reason I wanted to highlight them is I think in our culture today, the places that get celebrated for having dog-friendly policies are the ones that do crazy PR stunts for it. You know, like, I'm going to offer this dog food menu with $10 burgers for your dog.
Really?
And, yeah, you know, puppy birthday parties, that whole culture. Which is all fun and
sure,
great.
That's fine if that's your thing. Of course.
But, you know, there's this beautiful portion of Chicago dog bar culture where it's just chill. And the focus is not on trying to get you to bring your dog in the door, and it's not on treating your dog, you know, it's not on showering attention on your dog when you come in. It's just, you can bring the dog in, the dog can just sit by you, chill out, you know. They're not trying to make money off of your dog.
Ah, see, and that's the key. And I know that goes for, you know, a lot of different areas of our life and festivals and stuff. You don't want to feel like you're being exploited. So it used to be you'd walk by and you'd see a place and maybe they just have a bowl of water out front if you're walking your dog. That was always nice. And, you know, there's a couple bars that I've been to. Like you say, it's a little corner bar. If you want to bring your dog in, that's cool. If you don't, that's cool. But that's the key. Is that what makes a good dog bar as opposed to maybe one that's trying to be exploited? The dog's welcome or not. It doesn't matter.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, while it is something that has been around for quite some time, I would say the oldest one I could find while doing my research for this story is called Cody's in Lakeview. And Gene Frankowski, the owner, opened it 31 years ago.
Wow.
And, you know, he had a dog named Cody at the time. And so he wanted Cody to be able to be in the bar and then other people to bring their dogs. And so he was kind of the first person I could find that had fostered this culture. But, you know, not every bar is going to be allowed to let dogs in. It has to be a bar that doesn't serve food.
Okay. I was going to ask, because you'd think, okay, I love my dogs. I don't know if I don't like them around when I'm eating. You know, because they're just looking at me and slobbering, and I can only imagine if a stranger is eating. So it has to be, it's a bar that just has a tavern license, right?
Exactly.
So a tavern license means that they can have snacks, but they don't have a kitchen. They're not serving food.
Right. A tavern license means they're not required to serve food.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, other licenses might require a place to serve food to kind of, you know, keep the inebriation under control.
Sure. Yeah.
But so tavern licenses are, I believe, as far as what Gene was telling me, you know, a little harder to get because
the city stopped issuing those for a while, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And now they are issuing them again. So that's why, you know, you'll see in my piece, there are a few newer bars that are, you know, have opened within the last few years that don't serve food that will let you bring your dogs in. So I feel like we're working with like a set of the old school dog bars that have been around forever. And now a few new ones like Astereo in Bucktown.
That sounds fancy. That sounds too fancy for a dog bar.
You know, it's a different vibe. It's, you know, the old school Chicago classic tavern dog bar like Cody's is, you know, red leather stools and and deals on shots of Malort and dart boards and pool tables. And Astereo is more super open environment. It's one of those storefronts on a triangle corner. And they have garage doors on both sides. So they basically just pop them both open and you basically feel like you're outdoors on a
nice
day.
Okay.
But then on a, you know, chilly day or rainy day, they can shut those garage doors and you're nice and cozy.
And when you talk to them, what made them decide that this was a good plan to go be welcoming to dogs?
Yeah, I did talk to the manager of Astereo about that, and he said he just loves dogs, and it makes his day when he gets to see them come in and get to know the customers who have them, and he thinks it fosters just a really friendly environment among his customers. You know, you're in there with a dog, and suddenly someone else who loves dogs, or that dog reminds them of their own dog, comes over and talks to you, and suddenly you're having a conversation with someone that maybe you wouldn't have talked to otherwise.
When is there a difference between, now you talked about the new school versus the old school dog bars, is there a difference of how they treat the people who bring in the dogs between the new ones that may be a little more trendy, maybe not a great word, as opposed to these old shot and beer joints that, yeah, if your dog's here, we don't care.
You know what? No, and that was, it's so beautiful about it to me that they, while, you know, you go in and there's two different environments, at the end of the day, they're both just chill places where your dog can sit at your feet and, you know, they're not going to make a big fuss over the dog.
When you were researching this piece, does the city, because the city likes to have its hands in everything,
yeah,
do they have any sort of rules other than the tavern license and the restaurant license? Is there anything else, any regulations that the city puts on these bars, or any extra liability that they have to carry if they say, all right, you can bring your dog in, but, you know, if you bring Cujo in and he attacks everybody, it's going to be rough?
You know, no, the only regulation is the food one is the big one, right, yeah, for health department reasons. But, I mean, I am sure if, heaven forbid, something happened with someone bringing a dog that, you know, wasn't really good with people, yeah, into a bar and something terrible happened, you know, I'm sure it would be on the owner of the bar.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess it makes it somewhat of a risky decision if you're that bar owner deciding you're going to let dogs in. But I talked to a few bar owners about this and, you know, they said their customers get it.
Okay.
No one I talked to had ever had any issue.
Well, it would seem that dog owners know their animals pretty well, so they're going to be, you know, they're going to be pretty diligent about bringing a dog into a public area. If you, like I said, if you won't walk your dog in the park, what makes you think you can bring him into Cody's or one of these other dog bars, sit down and relax, and everything's going to be fine?
Yeah, exactly. And dog, you're right. Dog owners know their dogs, and it's astounding to me when you go to any of these bars that allow dogs, and the dogs aren't even barking. Yeah. They're just so relaxed and chill. And, you know, I have a 2.5-year-old pit lab mix named Winston, and he is the best dog in the world, but he loves people so much. He gets excited. He barks. And
yeah,
he barks a lot. So, you know, I know as a dog owner, I'm probably not going to bring him to an indoor bar. Patios are better because he can have a little more space to breathe, and we can quickly extract him if he does get loud.
But is it the same sort of oversight for patios? They're under the same regulations, right?
No, patios are different. So if you're a place that serves food, mm-hmm, you can get a specific license for your patio to be able to have dogs just on your patio. But that is a separate, you can't just assume as a business owner that you can do that. You do need to get permission from the city to have patio have this dog friendly status.
Okay.
So that's why you'll see just, you know, a lot of people out to brunch with their dogs.
Sure.
You know, on the patio, on the sidewalk, seating. So that's what makes the dog bar really special, I think, too, because it's all year round. Whereas all these places that serve food that let your dogs come on the patio, you know, that's what, 3 months out of the year here before it gets cold again.
Right. Yeah, that's where we've got a very brief window to get everybody out together. Marissa Conrad's my guest. We're talking about dog bar culture in Chicago. 312-591-7200. Jeff, what's the number? 591-7200, is that correct? Is that the number I'm supposed to be telling people?
Yes, sir. That's
yes,
correct.
All right. That's correct. Thank you. If you want to text us, 981-7200. I don't know. Just whatever. Marissa's here. We're going to talk more with Marissa on the other side. If you have a question, I don't know, save it for next week and I'll forward it to her, because I don't know how you can get a hold of us. Let's do this. It's WGN.
Mama said the way you move, gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Right on. Watch Mike and Joe. That's Micah Mateer and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN TV News at 5, 6, 9, and 10. Zeppelin stepping all over my reed. I tried to get it in there, but I should have picked up the pace a little more. It would have sounded great had I hit the post. And yet, I'm lax when it comes to my old DJ skills. That's because we're talking dog bar culture. I don't have time to think about Zepp right now. I'm thinking about taking the dogs out for a cocktail. You can't. Marissa Conrad is here. She had a lovely piece in the Tribune the other day about Chicago dog bars. The title was Chicago Dog Bars, Where Everybody Knows Your Pup's Name. It seems like a very welcoming community. If you've ever been, and
where I live, there's a couple bars that have the patios. Mm-hmm. So you can bring the dog out on the patio, you know, as you're taking a walk, you go, I don't have to be home for a while. Stop in for a beer, and they've got bowls for the dogs, and the dogs can hang around. I think it's great, and it does seem like a different sort of environment. People just want to be, you know, like you said, it's chill. They just want to embrace the fact that, yeah, the dogs are part of our life, and what are you going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the headline where everyone knows your pup's name is so true, because so many of these bars, the same people bring their dogs, you know, every other night, once a week. You know, I talked to a wonderful woman who, she plays floor hockey in a league. And so after the weekly floor hockey match, you know, it's go on over with her pit mix named Millie, very cute little gray dog. And, you know, the whole floor hockey team goes to the bar and Millie comes too.
Pardon me. And the people know that these are dog bars, because we know, now you and I are not these kind of people, but there are some people who are afraid of dogs for whatever reason, or God forbid, don't even like dogs, which I can't fathom. Because, listen, there's no cat bars. There's a lot of dog bars, so what does that tell you? Dogs are better. But the bar owners, they let this be known. So if I wander into a tavern, I'm not going to be like, "Hey, I'm surrounded by dogs." You kind of know what you're getting, right?
Yeah, you definitely know what you're getting. There's a sign, you know, to come back to Cody's, which was one of my favorite bars that I reported on for the whole piece. They have, you know, a big sign on their front door that, you know, says like, "Dogs allowed must be on leash."
Yes.
And that's a big part of it, okay, too.
Okay. So the dogs aren't roaming around free, and they're not, you know,
right,
they're not running rampant. They're just there. And do these dog bars. Now, let's talk a minute about, because I'm guessing the taverns, they'll put down a bowl of water or something like that. But I found this, and you mentioned it earlier, and I read it in the piece, these places that have dog menus. Did you go to any of those? Did you avoid those?
I avoided those for this piece. I wanted to focus this piece on the exact opposite.
Yes,
of
that. Real dog bars.
Yes.
Not, hey, we can make a buck.
Right, not the ones trying to lure you in because they have, you know, a PBR for you and a pup's blue ribbon for the dog.
Yeah, see?
You know, fun. Again, fun, but I think...
Or is it a cry for help? Let's be honest. If I understand. I love my dogs. I don't need to buy them special menu items.
Right.
They eat fine at home. Water's good. You know, I need somebody to be able to guide me back to the house. I don't need my dog getting all liquored up on his pup's blue ribbon.
No, exactly. And, you know, I feel like a lot of the places that offer menus like that, you end up spending as much on your dog as you've spent on your own bar tabs. So.
Which is ridiculous. But again, if that's your thing, I don't get it. I don't condone it. But good for you. Go on and enjoy yourself. So you mentioned Cody's. Give us a couple other dog bars around town that people, if you have a dog and you live in this neighborhood, you should do yourself and your dog a favor and go in and have something to drink.
Oh, yeah. Inner Town Pub.
Okay, where's
that?
You know,
over in Ukrainian Village, kind of right off of Damon is the main stretch. Right off of, not too far from the Damon stop.
Okay.
That is another one that's been around forever. And you go in and it's just one of those amazing, you know, dark bars. It's lit up by a bunch of Christmas lights.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, and has, you know, arcade game and pool. And you just feel like it's been there forever because it has.
Yeah.
And they are, again, just your dog can come in with you, but it's not a big production.
Okay.
You just bring them in, chill out with them. There's, a bowl of water, and they keep maybe some milk bones behind the bar.
Now, how... So we've got Cody's, we've got this Innertown Pub. What was the fancy one?
Estereo. Wicker Park.
It sounds very, very fancy.
It's a fun bar.
It's a fun bar.
But it's newer, yes.
You have any others?
Yeah, absolutely. Beer Miscuous, which is on Lincoln Avenue, kind of where Lincoln, Racine, and Diversey all intersect.
Right.
They're cool because they're half store and half bar.
Right.
So the front is a bottle shop, which a bunch of fridges, pick from a great assortment of craft beers, and then you get a little further back and there's seating.
Yeah.
So they are dog friendly only in that front portion of the store, but there are tables up there as well, and
those are
the best seats anyways because you're by the window.
All right.
And so they are pretty new, and I found that they have already established a community of regular dogs there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Regular. And again, we talked about it before, and pet owners know that there's not there's usually not big problems with dogs being aggressive to other dogs because people who own these dogs don't, well, my dog doesn't get along with dogs, so I'm not going to take them to a dog bar, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then the ones that do come in are the lovable dogs that just want to come say hi to you. Or just are okay chilling out and not bothering you.
All right. Well, find Marissa's piece in the Tribune, Chicago Dog Bars, where everyone knows your pup's name. Marissa Conrad, thank you for coming in. It was very nice to meet you. You can read Marissa in the Trib and many other places, and we'll talk to you again soon. All right.
Really nice to meet you, too.
Nice meeting you as well. Maybe our dogs get together, they get hammered, and then we can walk them home. All right. Let's do this. Then it's news time, WGN. All right, before we go to the news, the inimitable Jeff Carlin heads. You had a plug for some dog-friendly bars?
Yeah, well, one specifically. Yes. My good friend Ryan Sallers, who you know through what Knife and Time.
Yes, yes.
He also owns the Arrogant Frog Bar at Fullerton. It's like Fullerton and Southport, 1365.
Okay.
Great dark wood, hole in the wall, kind of, but classy, nice clean woods inside, not a dump. I'll love to you, Ryan. They do dogs. They love having dogs in there.
The Arrogant Frog Bar.
The Arrogant Frog Bar, thearrogantfrogbar.com. Check them out if you're up in the DePaul area.
All right. That sounds good. It's always good to have a place where you can wander in with your pet. Because there's a little brewery in town, and I walk by it all the time, and I often think to myself, man, I wish I could just wander in with the dog. You know, Debbie thinks I'm out getting my exercising the dogs. You know, I get dehydrated. I get, I need a little, you know.
Beer's mostly water.
Fluid. It's mostly water. The other stuff is just, you know, extra. All right, so there you go. On the other side of the news, we're going to change things up a little bit. You may have heard the story of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette editorial cartoonist who was fired. Who was that? Strange.
Nothing.
That's nothing. So were you mocking me? Why are you mocking me? Anyway, we'll talk to Scott Stantis. He's the Tribune's editorial cartoonist. We'll talk about that story on the other side. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conti coming up after 7 o'clock. It is a new age. It's a new age where if you are deemed to be too critical of the president, you may end up being fired. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette editorial cartoonist Rob Rogers found that out the other day. He had been having some issues with his cartoons, a lot being scrapped over the last few years. His big trouble started around Memorial Day, he said. In the past, only a couple of years of his cartoons would not make the paper. Then things started to get further and further between. That coincided with some new new editor at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and now he is out of a job. And I thought, man, it's troubling because if we can't criticize, if we can't use satire against the powers that be, then we are truly, truly going down a wrong road. A man who has to deal with this all the time is not only a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, he is the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Scott Stantis is taking some time to join me today. Scott, thanks very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I saw this. I immediately thought of you, and I know people have been talking to you about this because how can you not? This has got to be very troubling for a man in your position.
Oh, of course. Well, let me just first and foremost say, full disclosure, Rob Rogers is one of my very best friends.
Okay.
So I've known Rob for 25 years, and he's been loyal and hard times and good times. He's just a great guy.
Is it a small? So, it's got to be a small community, right, of editorial cartoonists.
Getting smaller.
Well, sure.
I'm laughing because as I'm walking towards the gallows here, there's probably about 25 of us left of what you would consider staff editorial cartoonists. And so, yeah, and there's one less today. And the reason for this one is really galling. The publisher, John Block, who's, kind of an odd, many generational, inherited the paper kind of guy, liked Donald Trump, wanted the paper to endorse him. The paper has traditionally been very Democratic, as you might think that a Pittsburgh paper would be. So then he brings in this guy, and he starts giving Rob more and more trouble about his cartoons. He hires a guy who's the editorial director of Blade Newspapers. Now, I'm not going to demean them other than that they deserve to be demeaned. There's two papers, Brian. So he's editorial director for two newspapers, the Toledo Blade and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Right.
And so he was brought in, and he just started harassing Rob. It's the only word you can use. And eventually, you know, Rob had more and more cartoons. It ended up to be something in the neighborhood of 19 in a row cartoons killed, and many of them were anti-Trump. But some of them weren't.
One that got axed was a drawing of a Klan member sitting on a table in a doctor's office, saying, "Could it be the Ambien?" Which came out of the Roseanne debacle. So that's not against President Trump. That's against something else. It makes sense. It speaks to racism. It speaks to all of that. If the argument was, well, you have to be, you know, we don't want so much against the president, why scratch that one?
Well, there's a lot of questions. I mean, Brian, there are a ton of ways that you could fire someone. There's a number of ways they could have gotten rid of them. With this, they went through every dumb way they possibly could. And in fact, I'm not sure if you saw the political story that was posted today. John Block, the publisher, actually got interviewed. He didn't know he was being interviewed.
Oh. That's dangerous. Oh, yeah. I did not see that story.
Apparently, he's a boy genius. he was at a reunion of his boarding school at Hotchkiss.
Oh.
I'm not making this up. So, yeah, this guy is exactly what you think he is. And he said some things about Rob which were very strange, especially if you know Rob. He said, and this is a quote that is very galling. I'm going to kind of break a little story here, if I may.
Sure.
He's just become too angry for his health, or for his own good. That's a quote. Now,
really?
That sounds like a threat from a Chicago goon.
Yeah, you're getting a little too angry for your own good.
It's bad for your health or your own good.
You got to tone it down a little bit.
But what makes this very particularly nasty and galling is Rob actually just went through cancer treatment in the last 10 months. So this was just a jerk thing to
sure.
say. Essentially saying that Rob's anger against Trump gave him cancer.
Oh, well, if that's the case, there's going to be a lot of people getting cancer. A lot of people going to get diagnosed pretty soon.
Now, Maybe that's their strategy. The midterms.
There you go.
Anyone who hates Trump's going to drop dead from cancer, from their anger.
Now, the new editor at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Keith Burris, said, "Oh, listen, we never told Rob that he couldn't do any more Trump cartoons. We just wanted to work with him. And, you know, a cartoonist, part of their job is to be edited." That all sounds pretty hollow, to be honest.
Well, and yes, we're to be edited for accuracy and for grammar, because mm-hmm. cartoonists are notoriously terrible spellers, myself included. No, you don't. You hire an editorial cartoonist because they're the ones who stand on the street and point to the emperor and say he's not wearing a stitch of clothing. That's our job description.
Right.
Now, you know, there's like I said earlier, there's a number of ways they could have done this. They could have said, Rob, you don't fit in. And mm-hmm. they could have just, you know, grown a pair and just fired him and just said, we're going in a different direction. Rob is beloved in Pittsburgh for a very good reason. He's been there for a long time. He's a great Pulitzer caliber cartoonist, and he's a good man. And so they could have said, okay, we're going in a different direction. Why don't we let you have 2 weeks for a victory lap?
Yeah.
And, you know, we go our separate ways. You could have done that. No, instead they tried to harass him out of his job. But, you know, you mentioned the cartoon about the Ambien and the KKK guy.
Right.
It has nothing to do with Trump. Nothing.
Not at all.
And so, but they really, this was just such a horrific way to do it. And they're lying. I mean, they can't get more Trumpian than that. Burris is lying, saying that we just wanted to work with him. So no, they wanted him.
No, it sounds like they wanted him out. And
yes.
Listen, we all know management and ownership changes and things change. And as you said, Scott, you could have just said, listen, you don't fit the tone anymore of this newspaper and you got to go. But what's troubling to me is somebody who, you know, appreciates not only humor, but a different point of view. When you start silencing someone whose job it is, as you mentioned, to call out power, it doesn't bode well for the future. If opposing voices are always silenced, and listen, employers have a right to do what they want, but come on.
No, this they could have also just moved him to the opinion page. And they,
sure.
You know, but on the editorial page, we're going to run pro-Trump cartoons. Good luck finding them. But you can try and you can do that.
Sure.
You know, it was just, it was, it, it defies description why they did it the way they did it, and it also plays into the narrative that Trump is afraid of any kind of criticism. And in fact, are we getting to the point now where Trump doesn't even have to say anything, that his minions will just act on his own, on their own behalf, hoping to curry some favor from this White House?
Well, it seems that way, and we saw it with Michelle Wolf from the Correspondents' Dinner. We see it now with Rob Rogers and his political cartoons. And I went back, and I wanted, because I was not familiar with Rob's work, so I went back and I was looking at a lot of his cartoons. And while recently a lot have been anti-Trump, but that's the job. That's what's in the news. A lot were not. You know, some were race-related. I mentioned the Ku Klux Klan one. There was the one about, there were a couple aimed at the NFL. There were all different kinds. Now, there's differing reports, Scott, that the one that really started this whole thing was a cartoon of the president laying a wreath on Memorial Day. But this had started long before that, right?
Right, and they also have run some very stupid editorials. The one on Martin Luther King Day that some have called racist, and I would challenge you to read it yourself and come to your own conclusion.
Okay.
I also want to say that Rob and I, although are very dear friends, I agree with him on virtually nothing. Politically.
Very so nice.
Like, I'm standing here advocating for someone who, you know, promulgates the same politics that I do. He doesn't. But the fact is, he's a deep thinker and an important thinker about the issues. He doesn't like this administration. And the fact is, he hasn't liked most of the administrations.
Right. He didn't start this anti-president thing with President Trump. He's done this for other administrations.
Yeah. In fact, on the Obama administration, he thought that they weren't left enough. There's a lot of progressives who feel the same way. Obviously, with W, there were some profound issues there. And I think that Rob was kind of, to give you some background about Into Our Cartoon, I'll make it very brief.
Yes.
Rob was kind of, there was a school we called the Yuck Yuck Boys, and it was just jokes. And Rob, frankly, fell into that category. And then George W. Bush was elected in the contested election, and that energized Rob and politicized Rob and made his work so much better and, frankly, so much more important. And the fact that his paper, his own newspaper, tried to silence that voice is beyond understanding. I mean, I'm very blessed to have the Chicago Tribune and their support, and they view me as an independent columnist. There's some issues that I have drawn on that the editorial diametrically opposed that. They were very, you know, different sides of the issue.
Right.
They like that. They respect that. And they actually want that. And it's great to work for a paper that actually values that.
Well, that's what the job is supposed to be. As you mentioned before, you're not supposed to be, as an editorial cartoonist, a toady for the editorial board. You're not supposed to illustrate somebody else's opinions. Your job, just as if you were writing a column of just words, your job is to give your opinion.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, I'm not lockstep with anybody. I can't imagine being lockstep with editorial. And that's not the job. It is an independent voice. And, you know, we do sign it. You know, it says Rob Rogers, you know, Kara used to say Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Mine says, you know, copyright Chicago Tribune.
Right.
But that's a courtesy. And it's to say, this is who pays me my salary and lets me do this job. But, you know, at the end of the day, my name's on the darn thing, not theirs. You know, if someone calls up, you know, they threaten to beat me up, not beat up the Chicago Tribune.
Exactly. It's your name on the marquee. Like you say, you're the one who's going to take all the heat. In the current climate, and you mentioned the class of editorial cartoonists is getting smaller and smaller. Is there a future for a guy like Rob? Is another paper going to pick him up? Obviously, he's going to keep drawing as he has. He's been putting his stuff out on his social media channels and different things like that. Does it worry? One, do you think there's a place for him still? And two, do you see more papers taking the gutless way that the Post-Gazette took? And, you know, if one of their cartoonists is not willing to take a knee, they just get rid of them.
I think you've touched on a really important issue. And well, first and foremost, no, I don't think there's a paper that will hire him, because there's no papers hiring that position anymore. They're not hiring any positions, frankly. I do see him landing someplace like a think tank, like a PAC, an academic position. I think he's clearly a very high-profile person today. So that's number one. And so what was the second question? I'm sorry.
Are you afraid, and do you see this in the business, that people who will not just acquiesce to editorial boards who say, listen, we don't want anything critical of the administration.
Brian, I'm sorry, I lost the train of thought there. Yes, to your point, yes, what's happened is we have snowflakes on both sides of the political aisle.
Mm-hmm.
Their offensometer is of 1 to 10 is set at roughly 17. And they are willing and able now with social media to just blast away at you and call you all sorts of spurious names that are racist or whatever. And, it diminishes the power of the word racist because there are racists in this world.
Sure.
But, you know, to use that as a bludgeon, and that's what's happening now. And I think that newspapers, as they become more and more diminished, sadly, they shouldn't be. I hope this story will, invigorate people to go out and subscribe either digitally or for the print edition of their local newspapers. But the editors are running scared. The business is scared. And so this kind of story serves as a cautionary tale. And I think that if there are other publishers and editors who want to do something like this, this frankly empowers them.
Yes. Now
that terrifies me.
It should terrify everybody who's in favor of the free exchange of ideas and the fact that opposition is healthy. It's okay to disagree with people in power. It's okay to disagree with your neighbor. Do it constructively.
Isn't it great to hear something that's disagreeable just to know why you disagree with it?
Exactly.
Just so you can go, why does this make me so mad? And then you have to think, because of A, B, C, or D.
Right. And you're not just regurgitating talking points. You actually have to put some mental effort into things, which that's tough, Scott. It's hard. It's hard to think. Thinking is not for the weak. Listen, I really appreciate.
That's a T-shirt, man.
There you go. Use that. Listen, that's yours. Go ahead, take it. It's my gratitude for you joining me today. I really appreciate it. Keep up the great work in the Tribune, and we will talk again soon.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care. That's Scott Stantis. He is the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. You can hear him on the Mincing Rascals podcast as well. So there you go. All right, let's do this. Then we'll come back. We'll see what Karen Conti has on tap. And we will. This time we're saying goodbye to the Showcase studio for real. It's not the false goodbye of last week. This is the real sayonara. All right? We'll do that after this, WGN. All right. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. This time, I am actually really saying goodbye to the Allstate Showcase studio. When I speak to you next week, I will be high above the city at our new digs on East Wacker. I will be up near Roger, which will be terrifying and thrilling all at the same time. But the one thing that will remain constant is I will see Karen Conti at the end of my program as she begins her program. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you very much. It's been a lovely day. We're here. Are you feeling verklempt at all that we are leaving?
Well, this going away has happened over such a long period of time. So I'm happy. I'm happy that we're leaving. I'm finally happy that we're going.
All right. Let me do this. I didn't realize I have. We have another break. Then we'll find out what's on your show.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot going on. It's very, 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 very busy here.